Good evening. Welcome to the first summer edition of The Bigger Picture here on Radio Yorkshire. I'm Billy Banks. With me in the studio is Danny Parkinson and Tom Feeney. How are you doing, lads?
Not too bad.
We've just been having a bit of a childish game of office football, haven't we?
Yeah. And,
didn't go so well. First of all, the quality was really poor.
Mm.
And you lost a button of your shirt, Danny.
Yeah, I've got no button on my shirt now. And I really like this shirt. And it's second time that a button has fallen off my shirt in the last few weeks. And they're both really nice, reliable shirts for work and for going out as well. So it's
cornerstones of the wardrobe.
Yeah, and I can't find the buttons for either. So it's upsetting, really.
Any mishaps with your clothing, Tom?
No, I was going to say I thought I lost that game, but I feel like I'm a winner now. I haven't lost any buttons. So small victories.
Mm. I've never seen anyone stand on a ball as much as Parkinson managed. Also, it's like there's a hole in your foot sometimes. Incredible scenes.
I'm not great at football.
No. It's Tom Feeney's first touch. Absolutely woeful as well, it has to be said.
The second one's a bit better, though.
Man, yeah, I was tearing it past you, Bill.
Yeah, we had a bit of a... Well, that's the thing, it turned into a bit of a tackle fest at the end, and it wasn't pretty, was it?
Well, they did used to call me the... what was it now? The bollard, when I used to play.
The what?
The bollard.
The bollard?
Yeah.
Box, you didn't move very quickly.
Didn't move very quickly, but if you were in front of me, or running towards me, it wasn't going to end very well. I was going to come out on top.
Fair enough. Shall we find out what's coming up on today's show? Now, it's a summer edition of The Bigger Picture, which means we will be talking about football, but also we're talking about other sports as well. So tonight, an action-packed 2 hours. We'll be hearing from two boxers who could make history. That's if they finally agree to fight each other. That's right, we've got Sheffield's World Welterweight Champion Kell Brook and Amir Khan on the same show. That's coming up in the next hour. England have lost the second test against New Zealand at Headingley and drawn the series 1-1. It's been one of the most exciting test series of recent times, I'd say. And joining us to pick through the bones is the Yorkshire Post cricket writer Chris Waters. Sheffield United have a new manager. Former Southampton, Reading and Scunthorpe boss Nigel Atkins is the man to replace Nigel Clough as the Blades try and scramble out of League One. We'll be hearing from the man himself and a couple of people who know a lot about him. Plus, we've got all the usual stuff. We've got our transfer tittle tattle, Danny's dossier, and our Tuesday night pub quiz. Oh, and we might talk about FIFA as well. It's time to talk boxing. Now, there's only one fight that boxing fans are interested in at the moment, and that's a domestic tear-up between Sheffield's Kell Brook and Amir Khan. Both fighters were in action at the weekend, with Brook defending his IBF world title against fellow Brit Frankie Gavin in dominating fashion at the O2 Arena in London, while Khan overcame the challenge of Chris Algieri over in the States in front of a pretty small audience in comparison. Now, the two fighters have a few things in common. Firstly, they don't like each other. And secondly, they're both struggling to attract a big fight against the likes of Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao. That basically means the pair are surely both closing in on a domestic super fight. I mean, they could sell out any arena going in the UK, surely, Danny?
Definitely. There's no doubt about that for me. This is a fight that everyone's wanted to see for a while. Quite frankly, I imagine matchroom boxing promoter Eddie Hearn is getting quite sick of having to answer this question every time.
Yeah, getting annoyed, isn't he?
Yeah, because every time I've spoken to him, I always ask him the question. It's not just because I know that boxing listeners want to know. It's because I want to know as a boxing fan as well.
Yeah,
I want to know if that's going to happen. And every time it just seems to get closer and then it just all collapses at once. Seeing everything that's happened in the last couple of days, seeing that press conference, it just looks to me like it's even further away now. And I just don't want it to be a case of looking back and thinking, I wish that fight had happened. You know, that's the big one for me.
Well, Eddie Hearn's been getting pretty annoyed. Kell Brook says he'll fight him any time. He thinks it's the logical next fight. But it seems it's Khan who's doing his best to avoid the fight, really. He's instead desperate to take on Mayweather, which would probably be, you know, his last fight before retiring. We're going to hear from Amir Khan. Sam Bridges, our boxing correspondent, went out to speak to him this afternoon. But first of all, Let's see what Brooke had to say when he joined the lads on Good Morning Yorkshire earlier today.
Sheffield's Kell Brook defended his IBF welterweight world title at the weekend, stopping Frankie Gavin in six rounds, and he joins me on the line now. Kell, congratulations. You retained that IBF welterweight world title. Tell us a little bit about what it was like fighting at the O2 on the night in front of an absolutely packed crowd.
Yeah, it was something different, you know, fighting in front of 17,000. You know, it was different from boxing at Sheffield Arena. You know, the atmosphere was electric in there. You know, the card was packed with so much talent. And it were fantastic for me to be topping the bill, you know, down in London at the O2.
Yeah, do you feel that you are getting that national recognition now, topping the bill down at the O2? You said there's 17,000 fans. It was Sky Box Office as well.
I think it were 19,000. I might be wrong. I don't know if it's 7. I'm sure it were 19,000, actually, thinking about it. But, yeah, I think I'm getting the recognition now. I think that, you know, wherever I go in Britain, you know, I can, you know, top the bill. And I think I'm becoming that pay-per-view star, you know, that I've always wanted to be. I think that I'm getting the recognition now, you know, with me displayed at the weekend.
Yeah, how's that affected you in training and when you're out and about and stuff like that? Has it made any kind of difference to Kell Brook, you know, Monday to Friday in the gym? Did you get a bit of an air of extra confidence, maybe?
You know, I think I'm getting the confidence from, you know, how active I've been fighting, from the Jojo Dan fight straight into this fight with no rest. It's great momentum for me. But other than that, you know, it's not changed me as a person, you know, like, you know, I'm still the normal, you know, normal Kell Brook guy from a council estate, you know. And at the end of the day, you know, I've worked very hard to be in the position I'm in, and my feet are firmly on the ground.
Good to hear, Kell. But in terms of, you know, where you go next now, obviously straight after the fight, the questions keep getting asked. They always come every time you fight about Amir Khan. You said you're bored of it. Eddie Hearn in the press conference was really passionate about why the fight's not taking place. But, you know, I've got to ask you, what from your point of view, why do you think Amir Khan won't take this fight with yourself?
I just think he's scared. I think he's a chicken. That's what I think. He's scared. If anybody says to me, you can fight for a world title with the most money I'm going to be in a fight with a great domestic dust-up, you know, straight away, you know, straight away, I'd be straight there for that fight. It don't make any sense to me that, you know, he's boxing. You know, every fight I want to become world champion. He's in my weight category. He's on about wanting to fight Floyd Mayweather. So if I'm such an easy opponent, why don't you fight me and have a belt and bring a belt to the table to lure Floyd in? It don't make no sense to me that, you know, he seems to be having these fights. You know, I'm playing it safe, you know, very winnable fights for himself.
You mentioned Floyd Mayweather there, and obviously that's the carrot that he seems to be chasing. But do you think that's becoming now more of an excuse than a reality?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I'm all bored out with the Amir Khan talk. You know, he's, you know, I'm world champion. It took me all my career to get into the position I'm in, and you know, end of day, he's avoiding me. So, you know, I'm only wanting to make that fight for the fans. You know, I'm not really bothered. You know, he's been beat before. I'm after Floyd Mayweather, who's unbeaten. I'm after big names, who's in the elite top level, like Manny Pacquiao and Madonna and Brandon Rios, them kind of fighters.
Well, there you go. Sheffield world champion welterweight boxer Kell Brook speaking about a possible fight in the future with Amir Khan. It's not looking very likely at the moment, but it's a fight that we all want to see. Coming up next, we'll be hearing from Amir Khan and also our boxing correspondent, Sam Bridges.
The Bigger Picture, every Tuesday on Radio Yorkshire. Unless Leeds United are playing, and if we can be bothered planning it, and if Billy, Danny and Tom decide to turn up.
We're talking about boxing. Don't forget, after 8 o'clock, we'll be talking about the England cricket team and looking ahead to the Yorkshire v Lancashire T20 with Chris Waters from the Yorkshire Post. Also, we'll have an update on Danny's button situation with his shirt after he destroyed his shirt playing a bit of office football earlier. Now, let's go back to the boxing, because today our boxing correspondent Sam Bridges has been over to Amir Khan's hometown of Bolton to ask him about a potential British super fight with Kell Brook. And here is what he had to say.
Amir, thanks for talking to Radio Yorkshire. Are you tired of talking about a certain Yorkshireman today in Kell Brook?
Who? Yeah, you know what? Just been talking about... I mean, the two names that they always mention is Mayweather and Kell Brook. I mean, you do get tired of people mentioning then those names. But look, it's what the fans always want to know about, what's going on next, and I'm sure Kell Brook wants to know as well. But I'll just make it easier for him and say that there's no interest in that fight just yet. So that's just answering his questions and all his fans' questions.
I interviewed him yesterday. He had a statement to make rather than a question. He said you were chicken not to fight him. How do you respond to that?
I mean, fine. If he thinks that, then that's not a problem. I think my resume says it all, what I've done. You know, and the world titles I've won and everything, and titles I've won in the game of boxing, and being the youngest ever Olympian to win a medal in the Olympics. I think my skills and what I've done says it all. Kell's just become a world champion, and he's talking all this hype, so let it be. I mean, I'm not really bothered what he says.
You mentioned Floyd Mayweather there. Obviously, the fight that you really want, Kell Brook is the one that gets talked about, particularly over here. In terms of kind of where would you put Kell Brook in terms of the welterweights that you may fight in the next kind of 12, 18 months?
I mean, he's up there, you know, with the welterweights, obviously, but the welterweights I want to fight, obviously, and I'll probably fight overseas will be in the likes of Keith Thurman, Broner, Bradley, Marquez. You know, you got Mayweather there, you got Manny Pacquiao there. So some big names there. And, you know, or Miguel Cotto at catchweight. So there's some big names out there for me in the sport of boxing. But at the moment, Kell Brook doesn't really show up on that. If you look at all those names I mentioned and look at their last few opponents, they're a lot better than Jojo, Dan and Frankie Gavin. Being a world champion doesn't mean you're the best fighter in the world. There's four world titles in every division. Holding one of them doesn't make you the best fighter. And also it doesn't make you... I mean, you can... Look who he's fought since he's been a world champion. The only one decent name he's fought and he beat was Sean Porter. And Sean, you know, is a decent fighter. And that could have gone either way. Obviously, I know Sean from the amateur days and also the... in San Francisco, where he also calls to train. But, you know, that's the only name he's faced, a decent name he's faced, and he beat. So credit to him there. But I still don't think, you know, he's on the level as I'm on. And he obviously, he's going to talk big and is also going to make himself feel, give himself confidence and make himself feel like he's better than me. But look, us fighters have to be confident, and we always talk like that.
Yeah, in terms of then the Mayweather fight, that's the fight that you want. And you're saying Kell Brook's not on the radar yet. But in terms of the ingredients of a Kell Brook fight, the Wembley kind of situation, the money involved, the world title, obviously, the British fans desperately want to see it. Why is he not the one that you want to face after Mayweather?
After Mayweather, definitely, I think it could happen. But, you know, in the sport of boxing, I'm very fortunate. I made a lot of money in the game of boxing, and it's not about the money. I've won world titles in my career. It's about the names, really, fighting the big names in boxing, really, and beating them. And but it's all about legacy. I think beating Kell Brook won't leave me a legacy, but being someone like Mayweather, Pacquiao will.
Just lastly, just in terms of Floyd Mayweather and that fight potentially happening, what kind of steer do you have on the potential of it and whether it is going to get over the line?
I think it's a very, you know, it's possible it can be made. We have the same advisor, so obviously I'm going to speak to you. I'll see how close we are to that fight. Mayweather needs an opponent in September. I need an opponent in September, so let's make it happen. We're both looking. It makes sense financially, it makes sense business-wise, and it makes sense, you know, if Mayweather wants to increase his fan base, on the other side of the world, I think it makes sense for that. So, you know, let's see if it can happen. I mean, it's styles being fights, and I think that's a style that can make it happen.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you?
I'm very confident, 10. You know, I think that fight could be made, and also it could be a very good fight for me as well.
Well, there you go. There's Amir Khan speaking to Radio Yorkshire's Sam Bridges, and Sam joins us on the line now. Good evening, Sam.
Evening, boys. Right.
How are you doing, mate? Oh, Sam, you still there?
I'm just about, yeah.
Oh, you cut out a little bit there.
Yeah, dropped out a little bit.
You tried to pry something out of Amir there, but he took a big flat back to pretty much all of those questions.
Yeah, I think that's what he did all day, to be honest. There was a lot of talk, obviously, about Floyd Mayweather, and that's what he really wants to push. You know, he's in this position now where he feels he's got a good shot at getting Floyd Mayweather in the ring in September. It nearly happened from earlier in May. The Shea Brush, the Pacquiao fight happened, and you know that came about very quickly. But Khan was, you know, one of two or three fighters on Floyd Mayweather's radar for the fight in May. It didn't happen for him then. The potential was, but then in terms of what Amir thought, was that it was going to be Ramadan in September, so he wouldn't be able to fight in the autumn, but should be his luck that it's earlier this year, so September does give him enough time to kind of come off the back of the fasting and get back into some serious training, potentially face Floyd Mayweather. Will he get the fight? It's, I don't know, a difficult one. A lot of people think he won't. He still obviously helps out, and as he said there, the crucial thing is that maybe that they share the same advisor in Al Haymon, who's tearing up American boxing at the moment. So, you know, potentially, you know, that might be the key that unlocks it, but Mayweather's got many options.
The perception is that Amir Khan's got a big following in America, but is that following as big as everyone thinks it is? And is it big enough to attract the likes of Mayweather?
You just dropped out a little bit there, but I kind of got the potential gist of it. In terms of his, in America, he kind of talks it up and obviously sells out shows, but, you know, the fight in New York on Friday night sold 7,000 tickets. You know, the fight of the R2 for Kell Brook, all right, there were, you know, Anthony Joshua on there and two other world title fights, but that sold 18,000-19,000 in the R2. You know, and if he fights Kell Brook, he'll be selling 80,000 out at Wembley. So he's not going to be doing that in America. You know, it's selling out shows over there isn't as big as selling out some of these big arenas and stadiums over here, at least, you know, not for Amir Khan at the moment. If he fights Floyd Mayweather, you know, the likelihood is that's going to be at the MGM, you know, selling out that, but, you know, it's not Wembley, is it? And obviously, he'll make a lot of money from the Floyd Mayweather fight. He'll make a lot of money from the Kell Brook fight. So, you know, the money's there to be made for him. He said it's not about the money. It's not about the titles. It's about legacy, as he says. But, you know, a Brook Khan fight at Wembley, you know, what it's done for Carl Froch coming off the back of George Groves, that's his legacy. You know, that's all he talks about. So, you know, there is some big legacy to be had in a massive domestic clash.
Sam, it does appear, though, that time may be running out for Amir Khan, because Floyd Mayweather, he's got this one fight left on this deal. There's talk that he might, because he's on 48-0, he might try and get it to another fight, so he's 15-0. But it does show you Amir Khan, he's really only got two opportunities to fight Mayweather. So you can understand why he's trying to, like, big it up that he will get this fight.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's got to talk himself up and, you know, put the Kell Brook fight to bed for the moment. You know, so that's the question that everyone lips over here, that, you know, they want to see that fight. You know, they don't think he's going to get the Floyd Mayweather fight, but, you know, he's going to fight to the very end to try and get that. And I think everyone, you know, does respect that. You know, he's got to do that because it's a massive fight, it's career defined, and if he can get in against Floyd Mayweather, a lot of critics, you know, give Khan a very good shout because of, you know, his hand speed and the way he can move. And he was talking about the fight today in some of the round table stuff, that, you know, he feels he's got a game plan, he thinks he can box a lot differently. And the Chris Algieri fight on Friday night showed a very different Amir Khan. He was really unhappy about the performance today. Looking back, he said he wasn't really at it, he maybe overtrained, and he just didn't feel right on the night. But what he did was have a game plan, and Amir Khan in the past has not done that. You know, when he's been hit, he's got into scraps and gets knocked out. But, you know, things weren't going his way. Virgil Hunter, you know, changed the game plan mid-fight, and he stuck to it, and he got a points decision. So he kind of feels that even though he didn't perform at his sparkling best, that that fight may be, you know, just that fight just to, that, that turns a tide for him. And going into a fight against Floyd Mayweather, should he get it, that he feels he's got a massive chance because he can now adapt, he can now, you know, change the fights, and he feels that he's a lot better boxer.
Sam, we've heard, obviously, controversial comments by Eddie Hearn. He's been very angry about the fact that Amir Khan won't fight Kell Brook. But how important is it for the Brook camp to get this fight with Amir Khan? Does it put a lot of questions to bed, but also would it convince the Americans that, that Kell Brook is a world-class fighter?
Well, I think it would. You know, Kell Brook has said that, you know, he's going on his own path now, obviously. Yeah, Eddie Hearn made those comments at the press conference. You know, I think he was getting a little bit wound up by some of the journalists, you know, who he deemed to be a bit pro-Khan, the way they were asking the questions. You know, maybe he said a few things that, that he shouldn't. He's obviously frustrated. He wants to put on the biggest fights possible. You know, he's, you know, come up against the difficulty in recent times doing that, you know, in terms of front. Quick, that didn't get over the line. He can't get this one over the line, you know, either. Massive fights. So yeah, he's very frustrated. You know, Kell Brook now, and the way that Eddie Hearn wants to play it, he's going to fight some big names. You know, he's potentially, if the Khan doesn't, that fight doesn't happen, you know, Manny Pacquiao in the mix, should he come back, you know, he's going to be fighting Brandon Rios next, you know, a former world champion. So yeah, he's got to go out and just get the big names in the division. As Kell Brook said to me on Monday, you know, he's looking at potentially Keith Thurman, who's the other world champion in the division, you know, under Mayweather. Mayweather's the super champion for the WBC, and Keith Thurman, the regular champion. So, you know, he's potentially stepping into Mayweather's shoes when he vacates that belt after September. So, you know, down the line, that's a big fight. He's an up-and-coming fight. Kell Brook's now emerging on that world-level scene in terms of the elite. But there's a lot of names in the welterweight division. That's the difficulty. It's not as if there's just three or four, you know, good elite boxers. There's quite a lot of them. And, you know, it is difficult to... Because Khan can just bat away and say, well, I can face him, I can face him, I can face Bradley, I can face Guerrero, I can face Chavez, I can, you know, face Porter, I can face Thurman. I can face Pacquiao if he doesn't get Floyd Mayweather. So there's so many names. It's not as if, you know, the Floyd Mayweather fight doesn't happen and then all that's left is Kell Brook. There are big fights for him out there, but then again, there are big fights for Kell Brook, and you know, I think eventually they will meet. Yeah, you know, just like Mayweather Pacquiao, you know, no one expected that fight to happen. Then all of a sudden, you know, within, you know, 72 hours, you know, things turn, and I think one day, hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later, but one day it will turn, and I think Brook Khan will happen in the UK. But Amir Khan's chasing the dream, isn't he?
Well, Sam, thank you very much for joining us. You sound like you're coming from a submarine somewhere in the Atlantic, so we're going to have to let you go. Well, thanks for joining us tonight.
No problem.
Radio Yorkshire. Right now, we're fair to Midland. The Bigger Picture with Billy Banks. On Radio Yorkshire.
We've been talking about boxing for the last half an hour. We've heard from all the big names, Kell Brook and also Amir Khan, and Sam Bridges has just been telling us about the current situation as regards a Brook v Khan super fight. It's all sounding very interesting. It could happen in the next few years, but we're all being left on tenterhooks. You can hear more from Amir Khan on Good Morning Yorkshire tomorrow with Darren and myself. We'll also be putting it up on Audio Boom shortly afterwards, so you'll be able to hear it online as well. Before we move on, some transfer news. An update on your button, Danny.
Yeah, just searching around this shirt. He has also given me hope for the other shirt. There is a button, a spare button, actually attached on the inside.
So you'll be able to stitch that on? Job's a good one.
Hopefully so. I'll have to learn to stitch. Last time it didn't go well, but I'm crossing my fingers this time.
Are you not able to do that?
Not very well.
I have very rudimentary skills,
isn't
it? I
have quite shaky hands.
Really?
Yeah, I don't look at that. I know it doesn't make great radio, but I have, like, don't have very steady hands, so trying to put cotton thread through a needle is not in my repertoire, not one of my skills.
What about you? Are you skilled with a needle?
I can just about do that. Just about manage.
Mind you, you're so tight, you probably never want to buy new clothes, and you fix all your old ones.
Transfer tittle tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Okay, quick time for some transfer tittle-tattle. Before the news, I'm going to kick us off with Liverpool. They're going through the bargain basket this summer. A few free transfers. Apparently, they soon will be agreeing a deal for James Milner, who's turning down City's new contract offer and the offer of a contract at Arsenal for a bigger role at Liverpool. Also, Danny Ings, move for him's on the cards. Probably cost about 5 or 6 million at a tribunal because he's a bit of a youngster. But, you know, are these the sort of players Liverpool will need if they want to challenge for the top four next season?
Well, I think when you look at it, Danny Ings has had one half good season in the Premier League. He's also susceptible to injury. He's had some really bad injuries in the past. So £6 million for him. James Milner, although he'll be a free transfer, you've got to wonder what he'll be paid in wages, because Manchester City were offering him about 150,000, so yeah, maybe Liverpool will be offering something similar, so it'll still be quite a big transfer in terms of the fee agreed, in terms of the whole package. So big money being spent for, well, when their problem really is the centre-backs.
Yeah, you let your club legend Steven Gerrard go and replace him with James Milner. What have you got for us, Danny?
Well, I just have to say that I think Milner is actually one of the best acquisitions Brendan Rodgers could have made since he started.
Interesting.
Yeah, but first off, I've got Cleverley. It looks like he might be going to Everton. They're the front-runners for actually getting the signing, Roberto Martinez's men. It looks like it could be going there. And also, an interesting one, Berbatov is now a free agent.
Oh, Dimitar Berbatov. Could he be returning to the Premier League? Who knows? I've got Diego Costa. Chelsea have quashed reports he wants to return to Atletico because he's become unsettled in England. He's apparently told friends that the injury problems, he split with his girlfriend, and the language barrier all causing him problems, but Chelsea have said they'll reject any offers. Tom?
Interesting one. Lee Irwin, who Leeds are being linked with very heavily. Some media outlets reporting that he's already joined Leeds United. Well, I can confirm that Motherwell have offered him a new contract, and that'd be a case that Leeds United would then have to up their bid. Leeds United currently offering £300,000. Motherwell want £400,000. So we'll have to wait and see if that happens.
Surely they can stretch that. Just a final couple of bits and bobs before the news. Dani Alves could be going to Manchester United on a free. Real Madrid are going to open talks with Raheem Sterling, £45 million. And Benteke, well, could be leaving Villa. Says he wants to leave to play European football next season.
Billy, Danny and Tom. Trios are now cool. Just look at Take That. The Bigger Picture on Radio Yorkshire.
The breaking news is FIFA have set Blatter stepping down as president. It's pretty easy to miss the fact that Sheffield United have a new manager, and that man is Nigel Adkins, the former Southampton, Scunthorpe and Reading boss. Tom, this has been in the rumour mill for a while now, hasn't it? It's finally happened, and what do you make of the appointments?
Well, I think it's one of them where Sheffield United, you know, a lot of people will say that they made the approach for Phil Parkinson, hence Phil Parkinson was their first choice. From what I've been told, it was a case Sheffield United always had interest in Nigel Adkins, and they basically were trying to see who were realistic options. Yeah. So Phil Parkinson, I don't think, was the first choice. I think he was joint first with Adkins and another manager as well. I think this is a sensible appointment, quite simply. You've got Adkins, someone who has got promotion from League One, the Championship, someone who's managed in the Premier League. The argument is there that he was in a position at Reading where it just simply didn't particularly work for him. A couple of the big signings just didn't get the goals. But you look at the fact that at League One level, he took over a Southampton side where the foundations are in place, and look where they are now. They're a Premier League side. He took them to the Premier League. And I think there's a big argument that Sheffield United have the foundations in place at least to get to the Championship.
Well, Nigel Adkins is the new manager at Sheffield United. He was unveiled about 5 o'clock at a news conference in London for some reason, so unfortunately we couldn't be down there, but we managed to hear from him through the Blades player, and here's what he had to say.
Kevin McCabe, my partner, is co-chairman. Prince Abdallah, Salahuddin Baki, our whole board. We have some of the other McCabe board members here with us. We're very delighted to announce to Blades Everywhere that a man who needs no introduction is joining us as the manager of Sheffield United Football Club. And I don't think I should say many more words than welcome to Sheffield United, and I'll let you do the talking from here.
Well, thank you very much. My point of view, it's really pleased to join. You know, it's been good. I've had good conversations with the two gentlemen I'm sat next to, and and the Prince Abdullah. So he's been really pleased, and I'm delighted that I've managed to bring Andy Crosby and Dean Wilkins with me. We've worked really hard together over the years, and we're really excited to join a fantastic football club with a great history, a superb fan base, and we're really excited with the challenges placed in front of ourselves. We're in League One, we've got to do everything we can to get out of that and look to keep building the football club forward. So it should be an exciting year in front of us. We know League One, having been there ourselves, is a massive challenge. We've got to be very respectful of that. But obviously, for our point of view, Sheffield United, we're going to be looking to get ourselves promoted this season.
Well, there you go, Nigel Adkins, the new manager of Sheffield United, unveiled today. He's got all the credentials to help them get out of League One. They badly need to. It'll be their fifth season in League One, can you believe it? And they need to get back in the Championship and get those big derbies going with Sheffield Wednesday. Now, let's turn our attention to cricket. England, in the last few hours, have lost the second test against New Zealand at Headingley, which means the series has been drawn 1-1. England were bowled out for just 255, whilst chasing that improbable victory target of 455. It means they lost by 199 runs. Only Alistair Cook and Joss Butler offering much resistance today, but it has been probably one of the more exciting test series in recent history. Joining us to talk about it is the cricket writer for the Yorkshire Post, Chris Waters. How are you doing, Chris?
Good evening, Billy.
You've been at Headingley for the last few days. It's been a pretty exciting couple of tests. It's a shame there's not a third or fourth.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the sentiment expressed afterwards by Alistair Cook, the England captain, and Brendan McCullum, his New Zealand counterpart. You know, what a pity that we've just had the two games, because it's been a fascinating little mini-series. I think the most runs ever scored in a two-match test series. So that shows you the kind of excitement that we've had. I think really, though, you'd have to say that if there was another test match, New Zealand would probably have gone on to win it. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise for England that it's over now and it's finished 1-1. But, you know, as you say, it was a fantastic 5 days at Headingley, but New Zealand were worthy winners.
What do you think we've learned from these two tests, Chris? I mean, we've seen Alistair Cook get runs, which was very important ahead of the Ashes as well, but maybe still some question marks over his tactics as captain.
Yeah, I think we've learned a lot of things. I mean, Cook's leadership has long been under the microscope. We know what a fine and dogged batsman he is, but sort of in terms of innovation and tactics on the field, he's somewhat lacking compared to, say, Brendan McCullum. I think that's something he's still going to work on, and I'm sure that when Trevor Bayliss, the New England coach, gets here next month, he will probably help Alistair Cook and formulate strategies going forward. So I think they, you know, that partnership is going to be key now for England this summer. Beyond that, there's a lot of problems, really, not least, I think, the lack of a match-winning spin bowler. I don't think Moeen Ali is trusted enough by Cook to perform that role, and you've got to wonder, really, what Moeen's role is in the team. So I'd like to see Yorkshire's Adil Rashid now brought into the side. I know it's a tough baptism for him in test matches in the Ashes, but I do think, really, that he is the best spinner in the country. England missed a big trick not playing him in the West Indies, giving him a bit of practice going into the Ashes. But I think what this series has proved is that, you know, we really need someone like Rashid if we're going to take it to the Australians. I think also we need seam bowlers who can hold up an end to give Broad and Anderson a bit of a rest and take the pressure off them, because, you know, there's no one really who was able to give Alistair Cook any control with the ball in the Headingley test. And I think that was a big area for England.
In terms of these two tests, in terms of the Yorkshire players, Joe Root, obviously, fantastic player, doing so well. There will be question marks regarding one of the two of the other Yorkshire players, though, including Adam Lythe, who, for Yorkshire, has been hitting some incredible innings. But for England, he seems to be a bit inconsistent during his first few innings.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Lythe obviously had 100 in the first innings, and I think that's pretty much now booked his place for the first, say, three Ashes tests. But, you know, as you say, he's been a bit up and down. I think he's had some good balls. You know, Trent Boult and Tim Southee have given him a bit of a working over, and they are world-class bowlers, make no mistake about it. But I think Adam Lythe is going to have to tighten his technique a little bit before the Ashes, when he's going to be severely examined, you would think, by Mitchell Johnson, Mitchell Stark, players like that. You know, they are the creme de la creme. Beyond that, I think, you know, Gary Balance, there's a bit of talk now about his position in the side. I think that's unfair, because Gary Balance is averaging over 50 in Test cricket, but it shows you the kind of standard that he set right at the start of his career, when He was averaging 67 from his first 10 tests. That's now come down to the early 50s after six low scores, which have brought him 77 runs in aggregate. So he's had a bit of a working over lately. But I do think that Gary Vallance is one of those players who will work it out for himself and he will come right. I think perhaps the biggest question is whether Gary Vallance is batting in the right position. You know, I mean, number three is pretty high. I don't think he's got the greatest technique against pace bowling. I think Trent Bolt worked him over a bit in this Leeds test. So maybe Gary would benefit by perhaps going down to number four or five, you know, and maybe Ian Bell going up to number three, another batsman who struggled for runs. So I just wonder whether England might possibly tinker with their 3-4-5. You don't really want to move Joe Root if you can avoid it, because he's the best batsman and he's been in great form, although statistically, ironically, this game at Headingley was his worst ever test match, returns of 1-0. So that was a bit of a blip for him. But I do think maybe they need to look at the running order, so to speak.
We saw England take on this attacking New Zealand side in the first test and match them and then beat them. It didn't sort of work out in the second test. But from what you've seen over these last two matches, has it changed your perception of what could happen in the Ashes later this summer? A lot of people were talking about the dreaded W word, the whitewash. Have they done enough to convince you they'll at least be competitive against Australia?
I'd love to say yes, but I don't think it has really. I thought, you know, looking at it from afar, I didn't actually cover the Lord's Test. I was covering Yorkshire at the time. But I thought, looking from a distance, that there was a lot of maybe overreaction to the performance there and the way England played. And I thought it was a reflection, really, of how bad things have been lately and the fact that, you know, you're just clinging on to any kind of hope. That's not to say England didn't play really well. I mean, Ben Stokes, we all know what a fantastic game he had. Joe Root had a wonderful match as well. And England really played in a positive and attacking way. But I did think to myself that maybe, you know, we have to bear in mind that a lot of the New Zealanders had just come from the Indian Premier League. They were a little bit out of sorts. And in this game, you know, England, I think, have reverted to type. They've been going along at sort of three runs and over, whereas New Zealand have been knocking on the door of five runs and over, playing a different brand of cricket, really. So, I think there are encouraging signs for England. You know, the form of players like Mark Wood, his emergence, you know, Adam Lyth coming into the team, getting 100. But it hasn't really made me change my mind going into the Ashes. I think that's going to be a really tough series for this relatively young and inexperienced team.
It certainly is. And finally, Chris, a big T20 for Yorkshire on Friday against the Roses rivals, Lancashire. How do you see this one going?
Well, it's going to be a fascinating game, Billy, because, you know, Yorkshire started really well in this competition. They won their first two games against Derbyshire and Notts. I thought the second victory in particular at Notts was a real statement of intent. But then, unfortunately, they went up to Durham last week and got turned over. I mean, that can happen in this form of the game. It's, you know, sort of pin in the hat time often. But yeah, it's important for me that they get back on track now in front of a full house, make it three wins out of four, and really accelerate into the rest of the group stages. It's a long group phase, 14 games. But you don't want to be sort of, you know, winning two, drawing two. You want to get a bit of a run and momentum together. And there's going to be a great crowd there on Friday night. I think we're expecting 16,000, so it's going to be a cracking atmosphere. And I'm sure it will lift the Yorkshire team.
And Aaron Finch could be back as well, a big boost for Yorkshire.
I'm not sure whether Finch is going to play in that game, but he certainly, his return now is well and truly on the horizon. But of course, Glenn Maxwell as well, he's another one who's, I think, he, you know, he's had a disappointing start, perhaps by his extremely high standards, to his Yorkshire career. So I'm sure that a big score is just around the corner for Glenn Maxwell, and if that happens on Friday, it's going to be great to watch.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Yorkshire, Chris, and enjoy that big T20 on Friday.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Radio Yorkshire.
We're as happy as a pig in muck.
We've just been talking about the cricket, the fallout of the England loss to New Zealand today. 1-1 in the series, and Some big questions to be asked about the England side as we head towards the Ashes. 5 one-dayers against New Zealand coming up, and that really is their forte. So if we're not careful, we'll get certainly demolished in those games. Probably we'll be resting some players, get to see some exciting young players for England, and it'd be interesting to see how they get on. But, you know, confidence will need to be boosted ahead of those Ashes because that Australia side is looking very good at the moment. Right, it's time to do this. Time for Danny's dossier here on The Bigger Picture, where we give Mr. Parkinson some creative license to go away and have a look at something or an issue and tell us some things that we didn't know. So what have you been looking at today, Danny?
Well, what I've been looking at is big events that will hopefully tie you over now the football season has ended and until the football season begins again in August. So I've got 5 of the very best. Obviously, number 5, it's got to be what we're just talking about. It's the Ashes. 2 countries fighting over the Ashes.
The precious urn.
Yeah, the precious urn. How well we will actually do, and the fact that every broadcaster will be talking about Kevin Peterson phone-ins for every week on the lead-up to that.
Well, what's amazing about this, and I think Tommy, you'll have found this funny as well, is all this talk about Kevin Peterson going to this Test series, and then it's our number 4 batsman, Ian Bell, who starts not getting any runs, and it's just like, oh, this is going to start again, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, that's the thing. You're just waiting for him to get a good knock for Surrey again, and then it's going to be... Obviously, we're out for 2 last time, so not much being spoken at the moment, but another big hit, and then Peterson will be just spoken about for weeks.
Yes. Sorry,
exactly.
Danny.
No, it's fine. I knew that would happen. That is exactly what I was talking about.
Provoking discussion.
That is it. It was exactly that. After that, number 4, Wimbledon, strawberries and cream, etc.
What do you mean, etc.? Is that your sort of working class and northern way of writing off Wimbledon?
Pretty much, yeah. No, I don't like Wimbledon. Tennis is good. The Open Championships, that's going to be absolutely superb. Yeah, St Andrews, looking forward to some massive action in the golf there. A couple of days in front of the telly, can't go wrong with that. And of course, one of the massive ones, it's the 102nd British Chess Championships at the University of Warwick in Coventry.
When's that again?
It's Saturday the 25th of July till Saturday the 8th of August.
Exciting storm.
Is
that on TV anywhere?
No. And number 1, of course, is the World Custard Pie Championships. That's the 6th of June. That's in Coxheath in Kent. Obviously, with the 6th of June, you've not got a lot of time to register for that one. So get yourself down. The winners last year were the Grannies. They're the defending champions.
The Grannies?
The Grannies, yeah. And the second place was Pie and Smash.
Oh.
Which was fantastic.
Excellent. So there you go. The football season may be over, but fear not, because this summer you've got a choice between Test cricket, tennis, and custard pie throwing.
The Bigger Picture with Billy Banks on Radio Yorkshire.
Could listen to it all. I really could, but we can't because we'll get shouted at by the boss. The Champions League finals, of course, this Saturday. The actual last game of the football season, unless you follow MLS like Danny. Absolutely loves a bit of that. Saturday, 6th of June, the Olympia Stadion in Berlin. 7:45 kickoff. Barcelona versus Juventus. Here's your stat pack for the evening. Barcelona have won it 4 times, last time in 2011. Juve last won the Champions League 1996.
Really?
Ages ago. They've won it twice in total. And of course, it's the Spanish champions v the Italian champions. So, an exciting match in prospect. Tom, will you be watching that?
Definitely. It really is two of the best teams in the world and two of the best teams on form at the moment, because one of these two sides is going to get the treble. quite simply.
Yes, they both won their domestic league and cups, haven't
they? It's fantastic. And, you know, you just look at it in terms of the way that Juventus have played in Serie A, the way Barcelona have won La Liga. Both teams deserve to be in this position where one of them's going to win the treble. And there's just so much talent on show, so many little stories. You know, players that are potentially leaving, the likes of Paul Pogba might be on his way. Pirlo, will he retire? We're not 100% sure. Barcelona, Dani Alves will be leaving Barcelona. I mean, there's just so many great stories, and wow, it should be an incredible game. Only problem I've got is it might be like Juventus v AC Milan in 2003, that final, which was the worst final I've ever seen.
Was that the 0-0 and then penalties?
At Old Trafford, yes.
Oh,
it was dreadful.
I can't see, no matter how good this Juventus defence is, keeping Messi, Neymar and Suarez quiet. Like you said, you made a very good point a few weeks ago on the show, Tom. You can keep one or maybe two of them quiet, like Manchester City did, but you can't keep them all quiet. Barcelona are going to score, surely.
Definitely. No doubt about that whatsoever. I mean, I'm just very, very happy that Real Madrid are in it as well. I would have hated an El Clasico final.
They're annoying, those games. You look forward to it and then you watch it and it's fouling, diving, shouting, moaning, isn't it?
Plus it's like 6 or 7 a year. It'd be like if cream eggs were sold all the time. I mean, it's annoying. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. You know, it's great to see Juventus back in a major final again. Yeah. Great to see them back up there. And like you say, it's two champions colliding, two real titans at the moment. I'm just hoping that Barcelona don't run riot and that'll be the end of it. I don't want it to be 4-0 by half-time.
Well, Barcelona are the major favourites. Lionel Messi, probably, you know, obviously Ronaldo won the Ballon d'Or last time, but Messi really has reclaimed that title quite in the last few months as the best player in the world. And just when you thought you were running out of superlatives for him, Gianluigi Buffon, the Juventus goalkeeper, has managed to find some more. He says, Messi is an alien that dedicates himself to playing with humans. The only hope is that this Saturday he will be from Earth like the rest of us. Fair enough. Yeah,
and I think when you
I'm sure it's more poetic in Italian.
That goal he scored on Saturday, if you've not seen it, in the Coppa del Rey final is incredible.
Well, I was
going to
bring
this
up, actually, because I've watched the goal. So basically, he starts on the right touchline. He beats three. Well, he doesn't just beat three men. He mugs them off proper, doesn't he? And then cuts in, then beats the keeper in his near post. Now, rewind it a little bit. If I was playing left back or centre midfield or left midfield, I think I'd have at least been able to bring him down on the edge of the box.
I think that's the thing. A lot of people think, oh, yeah, I could have tackled him. I'd have taken him out of the game. But he's just so quick.
Yeah.
He really is. You look at his footwork as well when he beats that left back. He moves it from his right to his left back to his right all in one motion. Mm. The left back doesn't know what's going on, cuts inside. And then, you know, beating the keeper at your near post, the goalkeeper would normally get stick. But it's that powerful a shot.
Right in the corner.
The goalkeeper's not even got down before the ball's hit the back of the net. It's that good a shot. It's, again, just another marvellous Lionel Messi goal.
My other thought from that goal, apart from it being a fantastic goal and everything, was since when did Messi have a full-sleeve tattoo? Did you notice that?
Yes.
What? He must have had that done in, like, a day.
He got this done in about February.
Ah, and he had something over it then?
I've literally have no idea why he's done it, but it's after he had his child was born. For some reason, he started getting tattoos on one of his arms, and now he's gone for the full thing and had a full sleeve done. And he's got a tattoo on his leg as well.
Oh, I knew about that because that was linked to an injury, wasn't it? He was sort of blamed. He got a spate of injuries on one leg after a tattoo, and he was thinking, well, he just, you know, sometimes. I remember Ashley Young as well. He wore a T-shirt recently, and I noticed he had one of these full sleeve tattoos.
Yeah.
In other tattoo news, while we're at it, I've noticed a lot of people recently with tattoos on their faces. Any thoughts on that?
No, not really.
Next time you're out and about, just have a look and you will see people are wearing tattoos on their faces and necks now.
I ain't seen that. I've seen it on the neck.
Yeah, I have.
That's
on the neck.
I've seen,
no, literally,
especially
like
the neck.
On the side of the head.
Really?
Hmm.
Ah. I didn't realise that. I'll look out. Now
look
you've said
that,
I'll notice it a lot. It's like when people say, oh, have you noticed that people started wearing yellow a lot? And then they go, da, da, da. And you walk into town and everyone's wearing yellow.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. I'll find it now.
Exactly. Tom? Will you be looking out for?
I will be looking
tattoos?
Out. I'm wondering if it's going to be like a Nile Ranger head tattoo with someone's name just written across the face.
Has Nile Ranger got a face tattoo?
Yeah, it's Ranger. He's got Ranger at the side of his face. He genuinely has.
No.
And then, on his tongue, he's got a happy face.
Well, he's not a very happy bloke, though, is he? He's on the run. All the big issues tackled here on The Bigger Picture.
Billy, Danny and Tom. Trios are now cool. Just look at Take That. The Bigger Picture on Radio Yorkshire.